Joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon are Kenneth Jenkins and Bree Castro. Kenneth Jenkins is the director, the coordinator of the dance program in the School of Music and Performing Arts. Bree is an alum of the program. She's also a guest choreographer for State of La Danse, and they are here to talk about the annual fall State of La Danse concert, which will be held this week, opens on the 16th and runs through the 19th, I believe.
Through the 20th.
So several performances, opportunities we have to see that. Before we talk about some of the specific pieces that you can see in State of La Danse, remind us, Kenneth, of how the dance and choreography program fits into the School of Music and Performing Arts, and just a bit about the tradition of the program, because it is long and renowned.
Yes, this is our 24th year of this concert series, but as you know, there's been dance on this campus, I believe, for almost 100 years.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's very amazing.
Forward-thinking.
And unique, mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Of those pioneering women primarily that went across the country founding dance programs. In our case, Evelyn Elizabeth Lockman was seminal here in getting the program off the ground. And as I said, this is our 24th year of this concert series. And this year really is a good example of fulfilling our mission in this concert series, which is threefold. One is to present a program that is balanced between classical ballet and modern dance. The second is to balance the reconstruction of recognized masterworks with the works that are commissioned original works of Louisiana emerging artists. And then the third thing we want to accomplish in every concert is that it is challenging and educational for our students, that students get to work with an array of choreographers who have very different approaches to their work, and that that leads to our students being even more well-rounded when they leave.
And yeah. We'll have an opportunity to see just how talented and well-rounded they are.
Yes.
Choreographers like Bree, who went through the program, will be participating
exactly.
in this concert. So tell us about what part of your mission is to introduce the students and our community to classic choreography. Mm-hmm. And this year you all are putting on a pretty amazing piece, Les Sylphides, mm-hmm. which sounds like it might be your typical, you know, I don't know, classical ballet, but it's not. It really was a really harbinger for some modern ballet.
Absolutely.
Tell us about the piece, when it was first created, and, mm-hmm. and why it's such an important piece.
Well, Sylphides had a number of lives and a number of different titles even. And the one that we are doing is the 1909 version. And its claim to fame is that this was the first abstracted ballet, that this was not about a vehicle for virtuosic technique as much as it was a piece that was interested in creating a mood and a feeling. And I don't think that's surprising to people today, but it was very revolutionary for its time. And it premiered in Russia in 1907 and then was seen in 1909 in Paris. And it comes after the arrival of Isadora Duncan in St. Petersburg in 1904. She went there, and Fokine was so taken with what she called her absolute dance. It was dance for dance sake, that he got rid of a lot of the classical pantomime and even the idea of a story, so to speak.
Like Swan Lake. We might think of that as the story, and it's got very rigid rules.
Yes, and characters. Mm-hmm. This is simply a ballet about a poet who is visited by these sylphs of inspiration. And it's a happy ballet, I think, too. If you're used to Giselle or Swan Lake, they have kind of dark sections to them. But Sylphide, when I danced Sylphide, I always thought of the sylphs as lightning bugs around me, just little blinking inspiration on and off. And I think that the sylphs are fascinated by having discovered someone they feel is worthy of their inspiration, and then the human who is taking in everything they have to say and responding to it in his poetry.
So we will be seeing for State of La Danse a very important seminal piece of ballet happening, 1907 in Russia. Uh-huh. And then, as you said, the version you're doing came out in Paris in 1909. Mm-hmm. That's several years before World War I.
Yes.
Pretty amazing.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, Brie is an alum of this program, so you went through several State of La Danses,
I guess.
And performed in some of these classic pieces and observed many of them. What did that do to your development as a dancer to be able to see these pieces brought to life and to participate?
Well, I not only performed them as a college student, but I was also performing in high school. I would come and audition for State of La Danse. And it's so wonderful to learn all this classic choreography and to be able to pass it on to your students. So now I have students that came and auditioned for Les Sylphides, and now they're performing in it as well.
Pretty amazing. And what does it do to your own choreography? Is it an inspiration to your choreography? Do you find yourself thinking back to some of these classic pieces and either, doing homages to them or responding in a different way?
Right. So I've done a contemporary ballet piece, and using all of this classical ballet, I get to push the rules
So you have
really
an interesting
fun
relationship with your own choreography, having danced in and studied these old pieces, but yet very revolutionary pieces at the turn of the last century. So a pretty interesting opportunity that you have here at the university. Now, who is directing Les Sylphides? Who is
Marie Broussard has restaged it after a lot of research.
I was going to say that creates a lot of challenges, doesn't it? Because we don't have video, I guess, of the 1909 mm-hmm. performance, no recording of that. So what is she working with? What does she find? What kind of research do you find to be able to recreate that dance?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly there are books available. Balanchine had a book called The Stories of the Great Ballets, and Sylphide was included in it. And Alexandra Danilova was dancing in it, and it's so humorous to read. At least it is to me. That apparently all the critics didn't like Sylphide when it performed, and Danilova dismissed them by saying that great artists were at least 25 years ahead of their time, and so you couldn't expect people to understand.
Excellent
the
greatness attitude.
Of what they were seeing.
Shouldn't mind those critics.
But it's such a unique opportunity for students. I don't know anyone else in the state, schools, that are doing productions this size of these classic works.
Mm-hmm. So how many dancers are in Les Sylphides?
I believe there are 18, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what are the costumes like? You know, I think some people think, 1909, are they still wearing those big white tutus? What are they, how are they dressed?
It is a ballet blanc. Okay. So they are still wearing the classical length white tutu. And because they are such diaphanous creatures, they also have these wings on the backs of their costume as though they were capable of flight.
So there's still elements of that. We would recognize that shape of costume, but just it's a much more fluid dance without those classic stories and more rigid rules of earlier dances.
Yes, they still hung on to that. You know, the feeling of the effortlessness of the dance is still there in the Romantic period.
Okay.
And I'm sure Bree will tell you, anyone that has danced these effortless-looking ballets knows they are tough. I would describe it as saying there's nowhere to hide. Either you've got it or you don't. It's all very evident in these ballets. And that, of course, is part of their greatness as well.
Mm. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about this year's State of la Danse, which opens this Thursday. My guest Kenneth Jenkins is describing Les Sylphides, which is being directed by Marie Broussard. Lots of dancers, some young dancers from high school, who have this incredible opportunity to experience this classic piece, as will we all this weekend. So, Bree, what you're a teacher now, obviously, so you have to mix both teaching and your professional life as a choreographer.
Mm-hmm.
When you were invited to be a guest choreographer for this State of la Danse, how did you begin thinking about a piece that you wanted to create? What was important to you?
Right. Well, I was thinking about what my audience would need right now, and I kept coming across this idea of unity. So that's where it all began, and my piece is called Humanity, and I'm really concentrating on the unity in humanity. They're all dressed in different color purple, long dresses, and that's to represent the different shades. And
you know, that's interesting that you say that, because I know we've had Kenneth on a number of times talking about the students, and actually have had other choreographers. And that seems to be very important to this program, that students do respond to the world around them, that that dance is, it can be ethereal, it can be without a story or a particular idea, but so many of the students realize that they can use the power of dance to comment on, to touch people about what's happening in the world as well. So you seem to have acquired that from that program as well.
Yeah, it's a lot about seeing someone in need and helping them if you are able to. If you see something, help them.
Do you have some of your students in it, or are there some of the students here in the dance program? How many?
All in the dance program, and they are wonderful. So eager to learn, these girls.
So the program that you experienced is still as strong.
It is. Getting stronger.
Well, and so the title of your piece again is
Humanity.
Dressed in purple, different shades of purple. And did you choose a particular type of music for that piece?
His name is Gabriel Proko 5, and I used it as a challenge to myself. He sort of starts off a rhythm, and then he'll start a different rhythm and go, and it bleeds into each other, so it's a little hard to dance to, but I tried to find a way to dance between the two.
And Kenneth, how are your dancers responding to Bree's choreography?
They're loving it. They're loving it. I think because of a couple of things. I think when we commission work, say from Bree, I don't give them any parameters at all other than you're invited to come make art here, and whatever you want to do is fine with me. And maybe it's because of that approach that all of our choreographers seem to be very invested in the transformative value in art. And I'm glad to see that they don't take that too far. I don't think they're ever thinking of it into the point at to the point of changing the world or anything like that, but they do want a transformative experience for the viewer, that you come into the theater and for an hour and a half, 2 hours, you can leave outside shootings and hurricanes and politics and on and on and on, and just be reminded of all the good in life, I think, and have that reinforced. We all know it's there, but this is an opportunity for us to reinforce our own awareness in the audience of so maybe it just lasts for a couple of hours, or maybe they think about it on the drive home, or tomorrow afternoon they think about
But it seems like it would really strengthen our sense of the ability of humans to create and transform, and that no matter what is happening around, we're not stuck in one place, that we always can take what is around us and transform it into something beautiful, something constructive, something different, something that gets us to a different place. So that is the power of dance and other forms of art. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about State of La Danse. It's the 24th annual State of La Danse this fall. It opens this Thursday, and performances will be in Angel Hall Auditorium. There are a number of guest choreographers, including Brie Castro, who is with us here, and she is an alum of the program. Who are some of the other artists who will be presenting pieces, Kenneth?
Okay. Claire Cook is doing a fascinating project. She is doing an updated version of Massine's Parade that debuted in Paris in 1917 with the Ballet Russe under Diaghilev, who was just leaving Russia because of the Russian Revolution in 1917 and coming back to Paris. There had been some tours prior to 1917, but in 1917, he brings Russian ballet back to Paris. And ballet had left France with the French Revolution, you know, and sometimes people will say, well, why didn't the ballet go to England or Spain or Germany or someplace like that? And I think the idea is that there had been the American Revolution, and then there was 1776, 1789 was the French Revolution. And so ballet was looking around for a more permanent home. And even though we think of Russia as part of Europe these days, back then it was thought of as part of Asia, and travel was very difficult. And the Russian court was very interested in trade with Europe, and so they invited ballet to come to Russia, and that's where all of the great, the Bolshoi and the Kirov and the Mariinsky Theater were all created for the Tsar. And none of that returned until 1917 when the Russian Revolution came.
What a great history lesson right there, Kenneth. I don't think any of us had any idea that that's how it happened.
Yes, and that was and so this is a major piece. Cocteau was actually driving an ambulance in Belgium during the war, and he would come back to Paris on leave to work on this piece. The scores by Eric Satie, Pablo Picasso did the costuming and the sets and created a grand drape, especially for the event. And to just imagine those minds together.
Just in the neighborhood.
Yeah. and that they did it during a war, a horrific war, is just amazing to me. And so Claire is doing a 21st century. That was 1917, so now it's 100 years later. And she is looking at it through a new lens, and is embracing some technological advances that I'm sure, if those artists had been aware of, they would have been using.
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. We're really looking forward to that, and she's working with Ashley Lachelet, who is here at the university on the architecture faculty.
How wonderful. Collaborative as always.
Mm-hmm.
Well, State of La Danse will have how many performances? You open Thursday.
Four.
Mm-hmm. So opens Thursday and runs through the weekend in Angèle Hall. You can get tickets at the door or online. What's the best
They're
way?
They're only available at the door this year. All so right. You might want to give yourself a couple of extra minutes.
Okay. So probably an hour beforehand, the doors will open and the ticket booth will open as well. For information, you can go to the School of Music and Performing Arts, where our Facebook page,
mm-hmm.
State of La Danse probably has a Facebook page.
Yes.
Okay. So you can look up State of La Danse and there will be times and location and all that information as well. This is the 24th annual State of La Danse, but as you were saying, Kenneth, dance has been here at UL when it was SLII back in 1900. And some very forward-thinking people started modern dance, modern ballet here at the university. So pretty amazing. And alums like Bree are a part of that grand tradition, and now they're passing on their skills and knowledge that they learned in this program as well. Kenneth Jenkins is the coordinator of the dance program through the School of Music and Performing Arts. Bree Castro is an alum and a teacher now, and a guest choreographer for State of La Danse this year, doing a piece called Humanity. So we'll all get a wonderful glimpse into her talent and her view expressed through dance this weekend. Kenneth, thank you for your hard work with all of these dancers over the years and being so articulate about what your mission is and what you all do in that program. Thank you both.
Thank you.